You're listening to The Meadows Podcast on the Porch with Bob Arnold and friends. Our current series is called The Great Sadness, where we hear people's stories about loss, pain, and suffering, and how God works through such tragedies. We're currently offering a four-week workshop series called The Spiritual Development Forum, an opportunity for you to deepen your divine intimacy, taking place at Grace Fellowship Church in Timonium, Maryland, on Wednesday evenings. To sign up for upcoming events and learn more about The Meadow, go to www.meadow4.org.
Well, this is Bob Arnold, and welcome you back to The Meadows Podcast on the Porch. And as you know, we're focusing on the great sadness. And today, we have with us somebody that I've known all 32 years of her life, Amanda King-Faree. And Amanda's going to tell us about a story that she's been involved in the last year and a half. And Amanda, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Just for your information out there in radio land, we started this and a massive hailstorm came in. And then we lost all power. So we're doing this without power and candlelight. So
we are setting the scene a little bit. So, hello, everyone. My name is Amanda. Basically, I just want to tell you about the birth of my second son. We had our first son back in 2012. It was a normal pregnancy, normal birth, healthy child. So when my husband and I got pregnant with our second son, we didn't think much of it. We expected kind of everything to run its course as normal. So when I was about 8.5 months pregnant, 9.5 months pregnant, I noticed that Miles, our second son, wasn't moving around as much as he should be. He wasn't kicking me and annoying me the way he should be. So I went to the doctors. I had a normal doctor's appointment, and I told them what was going on, and they said, well, did he move in the past 24 hours? I said, I wasn't really sure. So they put me on a monitor, and they watched him for a couple hours in the office, and he didn't move at all. So after those couple hours, they said, that's not normal. Something's not right. We need you guys to go to the hospital today. So I went to the hospital. Again, they monitored me and tried all sorts of crazy stuff to wake him up, including shaking my belly and making me drink orange juice with sugar, which was disgusting. But they're trying to get him to move. They actually even put him on an ultrasound for 45 minutes where they watched him. Didn't move at all. He had a heartbeat, so they knew he was somewhat okay, but they were getting more and more concerned. So after being under observation for 6 or 7 hours, they said, at this point, he's full term. It's better out than in. So they decided they were going to go ahead and induce me, and we were going to have a kid that night. So my plans right off the bat got completely turned upside down. I was actually at work that morning and planning to work a little bit more, but nope, it's time to have a baby. So around 1 a.m. in the morning, he was finally born on March 25th. And when he came out, he was he was still crying. He was alert, but it was a painful cry. It wasn't like anything I'd experienced with my first son. His coloring was like blue-gray, which was kind of alarming. I held him for a second, handed him to my husband, and snapped two pictures, and they immediately grabbed him and took him back to the NICU. This was up at York Hospital. So they took him to the NICU. And my husband and I are pretty easygoing people, so we're still laughing and joking and making jokes with the nurses and everything. And about half an hour later, a doctor comes back in, and she says, your son's very sick. We have to get him to Hershey Medical immediately because we can't handle it here. My first reaction was, are you serious? Like, I thought for some reason this doctor was coming in to tell me that my kid's really sick, and it was all just a joke that she was making because we were all laughing and joking, and somewhere in my mind I thought that'd be a funny joke. But it wasn't a joke. So by 1, they told us he needed to go to Hershey. Around 4 a.m., he was taken to Hershey. I obviously had just given birth, so I couldn't go just yet, but I was very fortunate to have a doctor who released me pretty early that morning. My husband went right up to Hershey with him, and he was with him in the morning, and he said there was a team of doctors around him. They were constantly getting feedback, seeing what he was doing, and at one point they said he wasn't responding very well, so they rushed him back to surgery. So at 10 a.m., 9 hours after he was born, they sent him in for surgery, and he was in surgery till about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. By the time he was out of surgery, I had made it up to Hershey, but I didn't really know what was going on yet. We hadn't gotten that many updates other than he was okay by their standards, which was alive. But we had no idea what was going on. And they told us that his intestines had become blocked to a point where they actually twisted and started to lose blood flow. So eventually it came out, we found out that he had what's called a meconium ileus, which was something I had never heard of before. And they said on the first day that most likely, like 90% of the children who have this have cystic fibrosis, which is a life-threatening chronic disease. So of course, in our minds, we were like, oh good, our kid's gonna be in the 10% that doesn't have it, just the fluky whatever, he had a rough start and we're fine. He had the newborn screening where they test for a bunch of different genetic diseases. Cystic fibrosis is one of them. And that came back a week later, and that actually came back negative. So for a while, we were still excited, thinking this was just a fluke. But he wasn't gaining weight, and he wasn't the way he was supposed to while he was at the NICU. And they said, this is another symptom of cystic fibrosis. We're going to do a full genetic test specifically for it. So about 3 weeks after he was born, we had the formal diagnosis that he has cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. So it went from being perfectly normal, me working one morning, pregnant, expecting to have my kid in 2 to 4 weeks, to 3 weeks later, we're up in Hershey. And it was really tough too, because we have the, at the time, 3-year-old at home. So my husband stayed home with our other son while I was up in Hershey with our newborn, just trying to figure out what's going on, why all this happens.
Now, at this point, did you know what it was that he had? Were you aware of the, you know, how big of a thing it was that he would have, he had that?
So, of course,
I know
when
you're
somebody,
an internet person.
Yeah. So. When somebody says there's a 90% chance your kid has XYZ, in this case, cystic fibrosis, the first thing we did was Google it. I tried to stay away from that initially because you can't control the information you get off Google. It's not always accurate. Uh-huh. And one of the biggest things with cystic fibrosis is the first thing that comes up is the overall life expectancy, which has increased over the years, but is still in its early 30s right now. It's creeping up towards 40, but to have this newborn baby that's only been around a couple hours and then read they're probably not going to live to be older than you are right now, that's kind of sobering. So I didn't jump into that right away until we had the firm diagnosis. Then I really started to figure out what was going on and what this would mean for us and what kind of how this would impact our life as a whole.
Yeah.
So
how'd you feel at that point when you heard that was the...
Initially, the night of the birth, like I said, I was shocked because I had a healthy kid at home. I didn't expect any of this to happen to us. We were healthy people as well. So just that kind of curveball was completely unexpected. When we got more information on what cystic fibrosis was and as he was going through the diagnosis and everything, it definitely became bigger than I thought I could handle initially. It's just a lot of information to take in. It's a lot of routine. Currently, he has, he takes like at least 20 different pills or medicines a day. he takes at least 6 or 7 medications and like at least 20 pills a day. It's a lot of stuff, and he's on the low end of what he has to do. He does an hour's worth of respiratory treatments each day too. So they kind of told us all this up front, like, this is what you're going to have to work into, this is what you're going to have to do. And in the NICU, I had the ability to work with the nurses and have care times and get used to stuff. But it's a lot of maintenance, yeah. A lot of stuff to manage in addition to the just sadness of, you know, this is going to be a lifelong issue for my kid.
Yeah. Now, I've seen some pictures of your, you know, of the baby, and the baby's just a very, very beautiful baby.
Thank you.
And, you know, how is it for him in terms of living through this, or what kind of a...
One of the things that's interesting to me is we actually were just back in the hospital 2 weekends ago. So he's had 2 readmissions since his initial time in the NICU, which, considering, is actually pretty good. Some CF or cystic fibrosis patients, some CF patients actually, they'll be back there almost monthly. So, and it's all been GI issues. There's a couple different body functions that it that cystic fibrosis impacts. But he he's a very fun-loving, happy kid, all things considered. I think it's nice that we got the diagnosis so young because he doesn't know any different. Yeah, it was life-changing for us, and that's something I told myself a lot in the beginning. So this is going to completely uproot everything I knew of life, everything I expected, everything I planned for. But this is going to be his normal. This is all he knows. Yeah. So that was kind of a comfort to me, too, that we could get started on all the treatments and the maintenance at a young age. Yeah. But when we went in the hospital, everybody commented at how at ease he is with children, or I'm sorry, how at ease he is with doctors for being 15 months old. Yeah. Most 15-month-olds don't want a stethoscope in their face, and they don't want to see a doctor, and right. they don't want, I mean... Unless you're pricking him to do an IV or draw blood, he's pretty calm and cool with anybody around him. So,
yeah. Well, I think, you know, one other thing is that, you know, especially with kids that are going to have, you know, problems in their life, God handpicks the parents for those kids.
I think there's something to say. I've always been thankful that, yes, it wasn't what I expected, and yes, it's frustrating, but we do have a great support system in our family. When we were in the NICU, my mother-in-law and father-in-law's church actually made a bunch of donations, including like gas cards, so we could drive back and forth to the NICU and home and stuff like that. So we do have a lot of people that are helping us, and we have a level of intelligence and discipline needed to keep up with his maintenance and his treatments, because it is a lot of work. And I think sometimes there are some parents out there that struggle with having that. So we are fortunate in that regards, and I'm thankful for that.
Have an older son, and he's in the middle of everything that's going on here,
yes,
too.
Yes, very much so.
So how is he reacting, and how did he react when he heard about this, and what's his relationship with his younger brother?
So we've been so blessed with Axel's behavior around Miles. He hasn't really thrown tantrums, didn't really... He struggles to understand some of the things, but he just wants to be the best big brother he can. He actually tells everyone that Miles is his baby, so he basically takes credit for Miles instead of me. I say it's bad enough that Dad takes credit, but now the brother's taking credit for him too. So,
yeah.
But he's great. He helps out with his treatments. He has to wear a vest. He has to do a nebulizer, and he actually really enjoys helping him. Now, there are times where you can see where he's a little jealous of the attention, and it's kind of weird because we've had to get Axel vitamins because we have to give Miles pills every time before he eats. And there's been a couple times where Axel's like, well, I want to take my medicine. Can I take that medicine? And I don't want to tell him, you know, you should be thankful you don't have to take that medicine, because then that makes his brother look poor. But He gets to take his gummy vitamins every day, and that seems to have smoothed it over for the time being. Thankfully, I'm only dealing with a 4.5-year-old, but I'm sure he'll have more questions as we get older.
Yeah. Well, just the whole trauma of this, and just knowing the story, I know you've been, you know, you were at the hospital for a long time at the very beginning and had to go back and forth, and you've had to go back and forth to the hospital off and on a lot over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me some, you know, ways that you feel you've coped with this, and what's really helped you to deal with all the extra things that are in your life right now to just deal with this one problem. So
I think one of my biggest coping mechanisms is that I'm pragmatic to a fault. I just deal with the here and now in front of me. So like one of the things I do just to help myself get through, since he takes so many different medications each day and has so many different treatments and requirements, I actually have a whiteboard on our fridge, and there's a corner of it that's dedicated just to Miles, just what his meds are, what he's eaten, what he's done each day, and I kind of log it. I relied on that really heavily right out of the NICU because I was so used to a schedule that the nurses had that I was logging every little detail, not just when he pooped like a normal mom, but like what color it was and how the consistency was. So I think for me, the biggest way for me to cope with all of this is just more information and more doing and just being in the moment as much as possible. I will tell you one story. I actually teared up the other day because I'm in a group for parents of young kids with CF who all go to Hershey. And one of the parents put a post on that Facebook page saying that they were talking to their young child who had CF, and their child is like 5 or 6, and they were asking if they called it Mr. Sticky, because they have lung mucus, if Mr. Sticky was going to kill them, and if he was going to die because of Mr. Sticky. So I haven't had those conversations yet, but I know they're coming, and she was just asking the group, you know, what do I say? How do I tell my kid? And the thing that's kind of stuck with me in the back of my mind is, I mean, eventually we all do die, so it's just making the most of what you have in front of you right now, having the most fun you can today and enjoying today as much as you can, and just doing what you can to be comfortable. So, but that was tough.
Yeah. So as you look at your relationship with you and Matt, how are you guys surviving your relationship? And
so it's definitely a big stress on our relationship. I mean, at sometimes we kind of do better with it because we can make jokes amongst ourselves about what's going on that we wouldn't feel comfortable making in front of other people. Because sometimes it's just overwhelming. You say some ridiculous things and it's kind of like, did you think this? And yeah, I did. And we're like, okay, good. So we're not horrible people. Right. We're just going through some stuff and this is how we deal with it. But it's just, I think the biggest stress on our relationship because of this is all the extra time that it takes. Because like I mentioned last week, they had he takes over an hour of treatment a day when he's healthy. It only increases if he's sick, then he has even more. So just getting up earlier, staying up later, and finding time for ourselves amidst having two kids and one kid that needs all this extra work.
And you're working full time, so when do you have time to do that hour long treatment, or how does that work?
I should get up at like 5. I've kind of just been going into work a little bit later, but I mean, I'm up by 5:45 almost every morning now to give myself the time to put him up in the half an hour in the morning, and then we do the half an hour at night. It's not so bad, but the morning one is definitely tough. We have to make some adjustments there, but you put your head down and you do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're, like you say, you're very pragmatic and you just put your head down and do what you got to do.
Exactly.
You know, do you feel like there's times when you just feel like this is overwhelming and it's, you know, you just get depressed and wonder, how can I keep doing this? Or
absolutely. Yeah. That's, and those are the hard times. And those are the times that sometimes Matt's great and sometimes Matt's in the same place and it's not good for us to be talking together, you know?
Yeah.
Thankfully, most of the time he's doing good when I'm doing poorly and I'm doing poorly when he's doing good. So we balance each other's out. But you try to find time for yourself when that happens, you know, because I can't get so wrapped up in all that's going wrong with my kid because I still have life to live too. But it's definitely a challenge. There's definitely ups and downs. Like I said, with the Facebook post, I just started crying. My mother-in-law was around at the time. She's like, what's wrong? It's like, I read something on Facebook. Like it hits you all at once. And you just have these moments. And sometimes Matt's actually a firm believer. Sometimes you just have to cry. And we do. And that's what you do. And you cry and you feel sorry for yourself. You feel bad about it. And then when you get that kind of out of your system for a little bit, you hold it off till it happens again.
Well, let me ask you a deeply personal question. And so how do you feel about God in the middle of everything going on?
That's a very interesting question. We're not as active in churches or anything as we were before. But I will say my mother-in-law's church really stepped up. They did the christening for Miles and they've been very involved and very helpful. As far as our relationship with God, I see that people usually take on kind of two roles when something like this happens. They either go so far into the every little thing's a miracle. So when he did get out of the NICU, it's a miracle. And then the other option is you go so far of how can there be a God that does this to children? Like my son didn't do anything. He was just born. How can you make him need surgery initially? I'll be honest, I'm somewhere in the middle. I go back and forth on my feelings. Like I said before, I think one of the things I'm most thankful for is, this is a big challenge, but I do feel like I've been well equipped for that. So I can be thankful and okay with God for that. But at the same time, part of me is just like, this isn't cool, God. Why are you doing this?
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's easy to understand, you know.
That, yeah. And I think I like to think that God likes that about us, that we do have that kind of range of emotion and we do really engage in conversation. I will say it definitely made me more aware of God afterwards, for better or for worse. It's definitely something that's more on the forefront of my mind than it was when everything was hunky-dory and perfect, because if everything's just going along, you don't think about him as much.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing is he is already, you can see it, but in his life, he will be a very, very special kid, you know, because of what he's had to go through.
People say that all the time, and I don't know, because at the same time, I don't want him to go through life thinking he is special. Like, my goal now is to give him as normal of a normal life as possible. Yeah. Like, I want him to just...
Yeah, and I'm not thinking special as, like, out of the ordinary. I'm thinking special, unique, beautiful.
Yeah.
Because of what he's had in his life, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're very involved with the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation now. That's another thing we do. I think I do it to cope and just because I want to raise awareness and everything. And I do hope that over time he'll become more involved with that too.
Yeah.
And just kind of spread awareness for what it is. But
Well, Amanda, it's been very good talking to you about this.
And thank you.
Even though we're all very close, I haven't really had a chance to hear your story. But
thank you.
So. And blessings on your journey, and
thank you
for coming and doing this. And we survived the storm and
we did
the hail and everything. So.